Falso. Friends, good evening. The title, you know, is Magic, Science or Superstition. It is as though we are challenged with the question, what you think about magic, whether it is science or whether it is superstition. And Theosophy has an answer to that, we shall soon see, that it is actually both. In one sense it is science, unfortunately it is taken as superstition. Now to come to that conclusion, we have to of course undertake the study of Theosophy. And in Theosophy, when we study magic, particularly a subject called magic, we wonder why that subject is taken. A kind of a recondite subject, a subject which is not really available for magic, is not available in the marketplace. Seems to be not so very practical. So the idea is, of course, to show there is not much that goes in the name of magic is truth, but much of it is superstition, because it has been accepted on blind faith, without understanding, etc. So to that extent, a lot of superstition is circulating around in the name of magic. Then this blind belief in miracles is one definite example we all know. Actually blind belief, because unquestioning belief, you merely hear that a miraculous event has taken place and you accept it wholesale, without question, without inquiry. So it is to exercise the kind of discipline of inquiring into the matter of things Theosophy has been ushered in, asking individuals to be free thinkers. That is, not thinking what I like. Free thinker means challenging things in order to be convinced about things. Because truth is that which explains. It is not thrown on the face of people. It becomes truth only when you have understood it. Not only understood it, you have assimilated it, internalized it. It is only then truth becomes your own property. It becomes your own thing which you can now circulate. So the stories about magical phenomena, etc., are rampant going round. But unless an explanation is given to each of them, they are merely hearsay by word of mouth. So ultimately the idea is that if it is science, then it has to be based on knowledge, understanding, explanation, reasoning faculty, rational. Another reason why the subject is taken in is because it is a part of the third object of the Theosophical movement, namely investigation into the hidden powers, recondite powers, are very latent in man. To investigate, that is to inquire into these powers. Magic is one such power. And also to inquire into these hidden, secret laws of what is called super nature. There is a visible nature, but there is a nature which is behind the visible. So an inquiry into that is also the object of the Theosophical movement, which was ushered in the year 1875 at a definite period in human cycle, which is will go. And also another reason why, when it was really ushered in, there is such a thing as cycle or psychism. There was a kind of a craze about such things like any popularity is there, so much of interest in things of this kind. And that craze and that popularity has not left it. You will find even today books like Harry Potter, series of them in films, series, this scientific fiction is thrown on us and people swallow it wholesale. Books, films, magazines, CDs. That means the interest has never died out. People are always have curiosity to know more about uncanny, unusual, unnatural things. This is a human nature. Right from childhood, we like to know something about it. And people can exploit it. In historical fact, there have been people who have exploited that thing. So this, among this popularity, as I just mentioned, one of the very popular films are the mythologies. They are not to be thrown away. There is a meaning which I'll explain that later on. But this is a subject in which people are deeply interested. And theosophy takes into account these interesting topics in order to arouse interest in the higher nature of man, in the higher passive forces of nature. Another thing is that, of course, as we just mentioned about the religious beliefs in miracles, and how much there is a foundation to that also has to be taken into account, and that's why this subject is important. We were amazed to find that recently a Reader's Digest published this book called Unseen World. It is an ultimate journey into the unknown, and it is collection of scientific theories, first-hand experiences, and spine-chilling stories. So this is a kind of an interest created by books of this kind. And there are five sections. The spiritual means mediums, reincarnation, sciences, clairvoyance. Then the paranormal, near-death experiences, deja vu, lucid dreaming, UFO, scientific, auras, electronic bio phenomena. This student doesn't know about them. And parapsychology. Then the psychic side is telepathy, psychokinesis, palmistry, voodoos, and the haunted things about apparitions, poltergeists, ghosts, ghost hunters, and exorcism. And again, books, it costs 1099 rupees, and people are buying it. Such is the interest in the topic. And why so? And of course, as we just mentioned, in the year 1875, there was a special craze in a particular area, what is called spiritualism, about these ghosts, the spiritual sciences. Then there were lots of magic shows going on during those days, and people were just moved and amazed. Crowded halls for music shows, and hypnotism was incidentally introduced during H.P.'s time. In the East, a lot of superstition in the name of religion, you know about this. And jugglery, etc. has been rampant, you see. In India, snake charmers and animal people who are able to control animals have been there. Exorcism, there are boas, there are witch doctors who claim to do healing. And so on. There are dargahs and peers and babas and so on in this country. This must have a grain of truth which needs explanation. Otherwise you can reject them. But rejecting things outright, simply calling it superstition, will not do. Because that is really unscientific. But this is exactly what scientists are doing, many of them, because of their materialistic bias towards life. They do not want to enter into anything other than this physical earth. Anything which can be approached through five senses, and of course the sixth sense, which is the mind, anything that cannot be approached by the mind has to be simply dismissed. This is another form of superstition. HPP calls it scientific superstition. Because superstition means irrational belief. So science believes that this is wrong, and therefore it is an irrational way of throwing away things. Throwing away the baby with the bathtub. An important thing is thrown away. It is said that a little grain of gold can be there in a lot of dust. And it is for us to search for that grain of gold. So with this introduction, we again say, theosophical movement was ushered in against scientific materialism, as opposed also against rampant superstition, a kind of a craze. But then there is what is, as we just mentioned, there is some partial truth in many of this craze. About explanation given, like things like fairy tales and mythologies, which are symbols of actual facts, historical events, and certain occult facts, which can be explained, and it has been done. We want to mention that I see some way. If you are really interested in reading a book like this, go to Isis Unveiled and you are entertained, sort of, if you want. A lot of information about events that has taken place in the East, particularly, and how magical performances had taken place in the East and the West. And among them, the explanation at the end of it about fairy tales and myths, symbols, etc. Of course, about this unseen realm, and then there are astral realms, and there are various planes, individual planes, as this title is called the unseen world. And then what is known as the divination, a very important phenomena is called divination, means to find out a thing which is not there. For instance, divination of water under the earth, which is now even our modern government is using people with that kind of a gift. They are able to search to get a tube dial sunk into a particular place. You can call those diviners and they will tell you and point out where the water is. Or even certain metals. So they have got that gift. So all these things can be explained away, and even mantras, power of the mantra, which can be explained on the basis of the power of sound. All this have got, as you said, it is partial truth, half truth, but all the same there is some grain. And if you need not dismiss them unless you investigate them. Now, therefore, theosophical movement was ushered in order to explain things. And then at the same time, if we give testimonies after testimonies, actual great magicians of those days. When we say magicians, mean those great magis, holy ones. The magi is a word used from the word maga, means the holy one, or the maha, maha atmans. They are people of great souls who are capable of performing phenomena by the power of their own spirit. So the true magic, if at all it is called magic, from the word magus, then it should be pure spiritual magic of a higher kind. Of course, there are low kinds of magic also available. So the literature, full of literature, theosophical literature, if you go through a lot of explanation, etc., is given out. So we can now go directly to the quotations so that we clear out the definition of magic. Magic is but a science, is the first quotation. A profound knowledge, not an ordinary knowledge, a profound knowledge of the occult forces in nature. Occult means not visible, not tangible. And of the laws, not only merely forces, but even the laws governing the visible and the invisible world. We said that the third object is with this. And what is the basis? The second says it's thorough familiarity with the occult faculties of everything in nature, their mutual correlations, attractions and repulsions, since there is a law of attraction and repulsions which can explain the cause or the origin of this, traced to the spiritual principles, not ordinary, spiritual principles to be traced, all those phenomena, which pervades and animates all things. At the same time, it requires an ability to furnish the best conditions, internal and external, for this divine principle to manifest itself. That means to create an atmosphere by the divine principle can function. That is an art. And in other words, a profound and exhaustless knowledge of natural law. This was and is the basis of authentic magic. So the authentic magic, true magic, if you want to call it is this. That you require all this quality, the knowledge on one side, and the true basis on that knowledge, and the ability also to do that thing. Now, I think we can also take up the third quotation, which says that magic was considered as a sacred science. You know, sacred science is actually in our language is called Atmavidya. Atmavidya is a true wisdom of a spiritual kind. What Bhagavad Gita calls true wisdom of a spiritual kind. Of a spiritual kind. So this is sacred knowledge, sacred science. Inseparable from, it was considered sacred science, inseparable from religions by the oldest and the most civilized and learned nations, once upon a time. Magic is a science of communicating with and directing, that is actually controlling, the supernal, that means celestial, and supermundane potencies, powers, as well as commanding those lower spheres such as the elementals. Now this ability to do that is, as we just mentioned, it is called Atmavidya. But then there are lower forms of vidyas also, which go by the name of magic, and in Indian tradition they are called Yajna Vidya, that is magic performed through yajnas and rites, Mahavidya, performed through yantras and tantras, and which can degenerate into black magic. This will be his warning. This Mahavidya, particularly the Tantric Shastra, which originally originated at a very high level of Tantra Shastra, is a very great science, but it has degenerated into black magic. And last is Goya Vidya, where mantras are made use of to perform certain magic. But they are of a lower kind in the sense that it doesn't require a very high order of spirituality to be able to perform that. It can be passed on by word of mouth in certain inner centers, certain secret schools. It requires a certain amount of discipline. We personally know of a person, friend, or school classmate who had to undergo a very severe discipline for the first 30 years. He had to become a vegetarian, he has to become a celibate, and live a very chaste life to be able to heal jaundice. He was able to heal jaundice, and people used to come with very advanced jaundice and used to literally heal them. Because he was able to undertake this kind of discipline, and he once told me, I asked him, he said it is through certain mantras which has been passed on to us, but by the way, it also requires a certain, in certain families this art is passed on by word of mouth from father to son. So amongst three brothers, he was selected by the father because he found to be suitable candidate for that art, and he was doing perfectly free this kind of art. When you sell it, you lose the power to use it. So he said, no, I cannot charge anybody. People used to bring gifts for me, which I may utilize it, but otherwise he would not touch money. So this is only one instance we saw that how mantra can also help in overcoming things like healing. Jaundice is a very serious disease. So in the last statement said, we believe in no magic which transcends the scope and the capacity of human mind, not in miracles, whether divine or diabolical, if such imply a transgression of the law or laws of nature instituted from all eternity. So that this universe of law, this is the universe of, this is where science comes in. Science has done one great job, apart from this technological advancement, that at least it has removed blind acceptance of things without scientific investigation. Honest to God, investigation. Because the very fundamental axiom of science is that this is the universe of law, that everything can be explained under certain laws after the end of an investigation. And therefore, against this supernaturalism, what's called supernaturalism means a miracle can happen outside of the law because a great person has a power to do that. He can put aside natural laws and can do what he likes. But if it appears as uncanny or unusual, apparently putting aside certain natural laws, it means he is utilizing certain other laws not known to science. So Theosophy says there is nothing that can happen without the knowledge of laws, whether known or unknown. But unknown laws may be also there. So why do you deny that? Science blindly denies it. Superstition blindly accepts it. Theosophy says that there are laws which can be given out, which can be explained if you are open to learning and undertake certain discipline. So this, and another reason why Theosophy was introduced was a warning sign, signpost everywhere. Even this reading from the Patanjali you just saw, there is a warning given. that if you exercise that power, you may lose it. I think we go through that reading, it's very nicely given. We read it. It is on page 58, number 52. The ascetic ought not to form association with celestial beings who may appear before him, nor exhibit wonderment. You shouldn't be surprised at it. You shouldn't be attached by it. You shouldn't be glamoured by it at their appearances, since the result would be a renewal of afflictions of the mind. That means he goes back. Suddenly he goes back into these afflictions which he has already overtaken at the end of this chapter, this advanced soul. And yet, by merely taking interest in these celestial beings that he encounters on the way, they are there on the way. But his goal is to reach the higher, the Kaivalya, isolation, or what is called the complete freedom from rebirth and being capable of helping people. So if that is his goal, if he uses his power, the moment he undertakes and misuses his power. So this warning is throughout theosophical literature, explanation is given, warning is given. The warning, because you require a qualification of a very high order to be able to perform true spiritual magic. Otherwise, this lower form of magic, anybody can do it. You can learn by paying for it. I mean, it can be mere jugglery, it can be certain tricks of the fingers. What are called magic shows are nothing else but the tricks of light and shades, light and sounds, certain psychologizing, mass hypnotic psychologizing people's mind. There are various tricks by which it can be done, and that can be scientifically explained. But what we are talking about, the magic, which is Mahavidya, secret science, that requires a qualification of a very high order. And the remaining quotations, you may go to it, we will not go to them, requires a kind of an inner training. So not all are required to undertake that discipline. In fact, at one place it should be said that even the third object is not meant for all students of theosophy. It is meant for natural mystics who are naturally inclined to investigate into these realms of the spiritual and the psychic, that is of a lower order, and they may undertake that. All the same, did give out a lot of teaching regarding this third object. So this warning always been given. Another very important warning is given about this mediumship. Because through mediums, a lot of phenomena can be performed. Medium is a passive individual who goes into trance because he has habitually learned how to do it. He is either gifted by it or he has trained himself to do that. And he is called medium because he is being used by some outside agencies. And he does not know who uses him. He has no discrimination. So this is the first danger, that anything can possess him and can enter into him and through his mouth can say so many things. We definitely know of a person personally who predicted this student's marriage with so-and-so girl 8 years before my actual marriage. A prediction turned to be true. See, this lady was a one would call it a magician. Actually, she was nothing else but a medium to certain influences, a pure medium at that. So there are pure mediums who are open sometimes to good forces. Through them, lot of healing, lot of foreseeing, lot of divination can also take place. That is what is called temple. In certain temples, like the Adelphis, oracles of the Adelphi, in those temple ladies, they go into trance under certain help, certain aids, fumes, sounds, music, mantra, what are called soma juice, certain drugs. They are given and they go into semi-trance condition. But being pure people, they have to stay there, remain there, chaste. They are capable of helping in healing, in prophecy, etc. So they were used in ancient times in those days in what are called holy temples. And they are sacred places. People go there for help. They are allowed even to, those patients were allowed to stay there for a number of days, but undertake certain discipline, and then they themselves undertake this kind of trance condition and come out healed. So this was going on once upon a time. But then it has degenerated into a low form of magic. And there was a warning that this kind of passivity, you can open yourself to bad influences. So this same lady I just mentioned, later on she started telling everybody, oh, this disease, it is because so and so is doing black magic against you. She went on telling people after people that this, you are suffering from this disorder, it is because you are under the possession of, or somebody is using black magic against you. Now this thing spoke from her own mouth in chaste Urdu. It is because she was under the wrong guidance. So you have to be eyewitness to such a thing. The student was an eyewitness, so we know the great danger. The people worshipped her because of that gift. But she was misguiding people because she was herself misguided. And once you are open to this, once you become a medium and not a real adept and neophyte, who undertakes that discipline voluntarily, and it requires, it's not easy to undertake discipline. See, let me at least read one quotation, the very sixth one. To become a neophyte or a learner in occultism or magic, one must be ready to devote himself, heart and soul, to the study of mystical sciences, magic, magic, the most imperative of mistresses, broods no rival. Means complete, wholehearted, full time, 24 hour service to that study. Can you imagine? Who can do that? Unlike other sciences, theoretical knowledge of formulae, mantra, etc., without capacity of soul powers, are useless in magic. Not only useless, dangerous in magic. So this is the important thing. And regarding these qualifications, we may go through it, but then it can be said that live the life necessary for the acquisition of such knowledge, the knowledge about the spiritual side of life. Live the life necessary for that knowledge. And the powers and wisdom will come to you naturally. It unfolds itself in the period of time. Of its own accord. Because you have undertaken that discipline for a long generations of time, sometimes life after life, these powers of power and wisdom, the power without lifting a fear, power to do healing, and in one place HPP calls it power to bless. Just wishing well of somebody and it happens. This is a kind of a power to bless. That comes to a person who undertakes this kind of discipline. So these warning signs have been given to people, and in spite of that, people become victim to it, because it's such a charming thing, you know, you want power, you want to power over other people's mind, you want to read other people's thoughts. About power to read other people's thoughts, we'll rapidly tell you a very fun story. There was a very advanced yogi who was undertaking meditation. He was in this trance condition, semi-trance condition, and a bird put shit on his head. So he woke up a bit disturbed, really disturbed. So he looked up and saw who it was. And he looked up with little anger in him. A great yogi with an anger is an unthinkable thing. But he did. And the sparrow burnt out. And he was surprised, oh, I could do that. Then he felt hungry, so he got up and went round the village. For, you know, the bhikshus, they collect food. So the first door he knocked at. He says, the lady inside said, Swamiji, main aati hun. She said, I'm coming. He waited. Again he knocked. Again she said, main aati hun, Swamiji. He was wondering, how did she know that I'm a Swami outside? Third time he knocked. And this time he was angry. She said, does she know who am I? I, the yogi, could do this. The door opened. She brought some bhiksha food for him. And she said, but you made me wait. She said, Swamiji, I'm not a little sparrow that you can burn out. Was taken by that. How could she know this? I'm not this little sparrow that you can burn out my way. You know, I was so busy My husband is bedridden. He has got bad sores and I was healing him and I just couldn't leave him to attend to you. But now that you have got power, couldn't you see what's going on inside? Didn't you have clairvoyant enough? The Swami was under the influence. He had the power of clairvoyant. He was able to see through the doors. But this time he failed. He was not able to see what's happening behind the door. He lost that power to see things invisible, to see things behind the door. So at one stroke, he lost a lot of power. He had to undertake the whole journey of self-discipline right from the scratch. So this is a kind of warning theosophy gives. And he got a long list of states in trance, which is one of the aspects of magic. But we'll rapidly go through it because they give an instance how the highest form of trance can. Trance is a kind of a semi-unconscious condition in which all the bodily senses are gone. The individual is on almost a cataleptic condition. He is not aware of his body, he is not aware of his environment, he is withdrawn inside. But some forces are working through him. Now the highest form of trance is called, of course, jhana state. In a jhana state, you withdraw from your body, you withdraw from your senses and undertake a certain mental discipline. So this is a kind of a samadhi state where spiritual experiences come out. It is in that state. So when a great yogi performs a real higher form of magic or healing, momentarily he withdraws himself, he goes into a kind of a state of trance. It touches his divine part of his consciousness, and it is through that center he is able to bless that individual to perform that miracle. This is the highest form of magic under the trance condition. Then I just mentioned about this mantic frenzy. We told you about this oracles of Delphi, how these prophetesses, they are called the prophetesses because they were going into that temple, going to trance and do healing. They used to plan one visions, predict things, oracles. This also is a form of ceremonial magic, it is called. Then what is called religious frenzy. In that religious frenzy, people can walk over a fire. In our villages, you know, on certain days of the year, near certain temples, there are people who go and walk over actual coal fires. A long line of people actually walking over it in a semi-trance condition because they were prepared by through magic, through music, through their devotion to their deity and so on. So they have been self-hypnotized into believing that it is not going to hurt them, and they are not even burned. They can walk across this without getting pain. This is a form of magic that can be performed through this self-hypnotizing state. Mesmerism is one form of magic by which you can bring about healing, but it is of a higher kind of healing because there an actual fluid is thrown onto the individual by that mesmerizer, putting that individual into a trance condition. He does not go into trance, he is fully awake and he is a controller. But he controls his patient and passing on to that individual his power. Opposite to that is to be, as written, a number of articles as opposite is hypnotism. That individual succumbs himself to the hypnotizer, permits himself to be hypnotized, becomes passive and allows the hypnotist to do what he wants him to do. This is exactly opposite of mesmerism, which is warning. This was given warning. Then there are people who go into avesh, like, you know, and use of mantra, tantra, etc. So now to sum up, the true magic therefore, we mention about these great magicians. They are the Maghav Sahibs. They are the great, because the word is derived from the word Magha, Maha. The word magic is derived from the word Magas. The great Persian magicians. In the Bible they were told about the three Magi who approached, who went to the baby child Christ, child Jesus the Christ, and with gifts coming from Asiatic countries, because they had been warned about the coming Messiah, a savior, and they were able to reach with the help of the star. This is a biblical story, but there may be a grain of truth in that. So it appears that such magi, such beings of this order, also exist even today. But they may not come out in public, because they will be haunted. You know, people with ordinary powers nowadays are, people follow after them, Babas, Sadhus, Swamis, people go after peace, the Vyas, even today. So the real great teachers, the real great healers, they don't come like this. They now remain incognito, at least in these centuries, because it is not possible to come out in the public. If we had to go to Himalayan heights to be able to encounter such holy ones. So here HPB has given in addition to this knowledge about the higher forces of nature, the spiritual part of man, she has postulated the very theosophy that she brought into the world, the great teachings that is given on in the secret doctrine and in Isis and Will. She says this is the product of the teaching I have received in order to pass it on to humanity for the present centuries, because the time is ripe. These teachings are given up by those great ones, those holy ones, and there is not an individual isolated ones. Though they are isolated, they are in a close network one with the other. They are in close network of communication one with the other. And she calls them Holy Fraternity of Aleph, the Lodge of Aleph Fraternity. So that is what is called the White Lodge of Aleph. This is a very important theosophical contribution, because acceptance of this has got two benefits. One is that the teaching has come from the great seers and sages. It's not merely ask you to merely accept them. He says they have themselves undertaken that severe discipline to be able to become seers of this kind. They have collected data from the mother nature. All the forces and the laws of nature they have studied by themselves. Generations after generations of sages have undertaken that discipline, passed on that information. They have been verified among themselves, then recorded. And it is this part of the record is permissible to this modern era and is given out in the name of theosophy. So what is given out as theosophy has been passed on from those seers and sages who have undertaken the discipline of a very serious, simpler, spiritual kind. And they are now called the White Adepts. On the other hand, there are sorcerers. That is, people with power. It is all about these three kinds of vidyas. You have got this three kind of vidya, but then you can make use of it for the sake of money, for the sake of power. And in mythologies, there are always stories about a great magician who is using power for the selfish purposes, who wants to become a very powerful person because he is able to control animals, men, and is really, truly, really a very powerful individual through the power of magic, what is called the occult forces. He is able to command them, control them, and use them for particular purposes of his own. And of course you know about the Ravana conflict. There are many stories of this kind. A conflict between the white forces and the dark forces. And the whole story of Atlantis is nothing else but the story of the last stage of the Atlanteans submerged itself when there was a last great battle between the white Adept and the black magicians, who were so far advanced that the white magicians had to fight with them and salvage a portion of humanity from that particular continent to salvage, because the continent was going to sink. So much of darkness was prevalent at that time. So there is a cycle, a dark cycle, where such great magicians come to the fore. This is now, somebody asks, what to do against this magician? He says, you and I are not going to encounter such magicians. Neither the black one nor the white ones. We meet some great teachers, great adepts, adept of this power, adept of this power, that we are not going to meet real great white magician or real great black magician. The time is not yet ripe. Because when the time comes, the great ones will have to descend and protect humanity. So that is outside of the chapter. So this is a kind of warning. So the conclusion is that this important contribution that the rabbi adapts. But then what do they teach? The one central always teaching that human being is not an ordinary being on earth. Among all the creatures, man is the crown piece of evolution, that is a spiritual entity within an outward mortal body, an immortal entity within a mortal body. And therefore, please concern yourself with this immortal side of your nature. It is like saying that you are given a jewel box, and we are so much enamored by the jewel box because it is so charming looking, forgetting to open the box because there is a jewel inside. So most of the time we are really enamored by this outward form of human beings. Great geniuses, great scientists have been available in all departments of science, philosophy, arts, culture. Great geniuses. But these are merely outward forms of beauty. But within which that little jewel, shining inside, requires only to be opened out. And that is a kind of discipline Theosophy projects and advises us to undertake that. So these are the two important conclusions, that though there are adepts of powers, Theosophy says that we are not going to create the factory of adepts. Theosophy was not ushering to create factory of adepts, but to point out that such beings do exist, that such thing is possible for even you and me, if we promise to undertake necessary discipline. Then now we are open to your questions. Factory of adepts.
Said
magic. How do you know that this particular sanstha, a particular body of teachers who are claiming to throw out so-called spiritual teaching? There are many, many organizations headed by really powerful individuals, individuals of great knowledge, tremendous knowledge. They could rattle out Vedas and Shastras and even secret doctrine by heart. They can speak about that, that Osho, great Osho. He could quote from secret doctrine verbatim. Now, they have got the power of memory and they could do that. So there are some such sanstas, our friend was asking. So there are some such organizations going on everywhere. To distinguish this, of course, requires them. I mean, to be able to know a wrong coin, you must know the right kind of a coin. And to be able to know the right coin, you must also be able to know the wrong coin. And that requires a lot of discrimination. So cultivate discrimination. But meanwhile, if you come across a literature which appeals to your higher nature and also to your rational nature, both, consult your mind, consult your heart as far as you and I are concerned. If you come across a person of certain magical faculty, certain ability, suppose he says, I can hypnotize, I can heal you by touching you. You know, man, a lot of healers, Christian science, spirit science and all those things, spiritual healers. Don't undergo this all kind of exercises. Use and apply your mind. Discriminate. And that is one of the faculties you have to cultivate. Theosophy is there in this world to cultivate discrimination. Don't accept Theosophy wholesale. Question Theosophy also. Inquire. That is why you have got study classes. Why you have got study classes? Why for 60, 70 years, Wednesday there were study classes, once or other, Friday study classes, Saturday study classes. Why do study classes? Because then you question this. You inquire. You find out whether it is true or false for yourself. And then only accept. And there are areas which you will not be able to understand. this student does not understand half of theosophy. Those areas which we are not able to really fully grasp, we can at least honestly say that, let me put aside, there may be some grain of truth. For the present, it is not for me. I will not say it. I won't reject it outright. I will not swallow it wholesale. This is what is the attitude. But certain quotations from scriptures which touches your heart, accept that. This becomes your guiding principle of your life. So about magicians, please don't worry. Never enter into this. This subject, as we just told you, is not enough to encourage to search for magic. As you just said, third object is meant for students who are ready and prepared to undertake that discipline. Investigation you need not do, because readily available teachings are there. You see, there are already books available. Raja Yoga of Occultism is one such book which deals with the invisible side of nature. It is a very studious book meant for genuine concentrated study. But the light-hearted study, if you want to make, I say somebody is enough for most of us, because it is very entertaining, very enlightening, and it should be personal experiences. So, how to distinguish requires wisdom. And therefore, that can be transmitted by word of mouth. One has to be ready. Friends, we can end here, but one last quotation which we thought to be very important. And that is for us, for all of us. If one, that is you and me, cannot, owing to the circumstances or his position in life, like family duty, national responsibility, etc., become a fool. If you cannot become a full adept, people say full adept, if you cannot become even a great student in this existence, let him prepare his mental luggage. So it's going to be a long journey. Let him prepare to his mental luggage for the next journey. Then he is once more so that to be ready at the first call when he is once more reborn. So these incarnations we can come together, study things. This is a kind of preparing our mental luggage. Then we'll be ready. At that time, when we are ready, the master will appear. As I said, when the materials are ready, the architect will appear. When the student is ready, the teacher will appear. So don't go out in search of masters and gurus and so on. The gurus will come. Gurus is right here. They first come, and there is one quotation he says, illumination will come from within when you are ready. When you arrive at certain degree of illumination, then illumination will come from within you. And then power and knowledge will come spontaneously from within. So prepare yourself. So the life, preparing a mental luggage is preparing this incarnation, life after life after life. If you make preparations, then the power will come to you naturally. Thank you.